So you're on season two of your podcast, I see.
You are the beginning of season two.
Nice.
Hey there. Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, where the art of conversation is back in business. Now pull up a chair next to Dee Fish. He's a speaker, author, business coach, basically all-around professional talker. And he's chatting with some of today's top entrepreneurs, authors, artists, executives, you name it. They might discuss business technology or what's playing on their headphones. Who knows where the conversation will take them? So grab a glass and join us on Beer, Beats, and Business.
I want to be around people that are smarter than I am. And if I'm the smartest person in the room, I got to find another room, is what it's all about.
That was Patty Dominguez. Patty is one of the founders and principals of createbuzz.com, and she's also one of the hosts of Boss Free Society, a fantastic podcast. And I was really excited to have Patty on today because she is a true entrepreneur's entrepreneur, and she has that perspective actually having come from a corporate environment, so she really understands all the different perspectives that going into getting out there and kind of trying to make it on your own. My name is David Fisher, but everyone just calls me D Fish. So if we ever meet in the real world, feel free to call me D. I am a speaker, I'm a business coach, I'm an author of many books on building professional relationships, networking, and how to sell more. But most importantly, I'm going to be your host today on Beer, Beats, and Business. Patty, how are you today?
I am excellent, D Fish. Happy to be on your show. This is awesome. And so my understanding is I'm opening up season two.
You are. You are the beginning of season two. So for everybody who doesn't even know that we have seasons, welcome. You're here.
It's just like Netflix, House of Cards, Breaking Bad. I mean, that's the way you roll. I love it. I love the season angle.
Thank you. It was all a brilliant creative idea that I came up with all on my own. And by that, I mean, I probably stole it from somebody in some blog article somewhere. So
good, it works.
Yeah, welcome. So let's dive in. Here's my question for you. You have a podcast called The Boss Free Society.
Indeed, yes.
What does a boss free society look like to you?
A boss free society to me means where people are really creating a living, creating a life by their own design, what it is they want to do. And I don't know, I say that from experience because I used to have a corporate job and it was all about the money back then. And then something...
All about the Benjamins.
All about the Benjamins. And there just came a point where I was like, wow, this is so not fulfilling. I feel completely empty. I'm not really in my purpose. And yeah, you can't go out and quit your job and then just have a purpose and hope to make cash or to make a living on your own.
Right.
There's some skills that are required for that, but just to live a boss-free lifestyle, meaning you can shift, you can pivot, whatever it is that makes sense for you, and literally create a life just how you want by design. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of investment, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. I mean, you can offer me a job for whatever amount. I just wouldn't go back.
Nice. I've actually had people offer me jobs after going out on my own, and it is a wonderful feeling to look somebody in the eye and go, thank you so much for having the confidence to be willing to pay me to do something, and no thank you.
Right.
I'm going to pass.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. And I think it was a quote from another podcaster. He has a podcast called Solopreneur Hour. The guy's name is Mike O'Neill.
Mike O'Neill. Yeah,
he's a nice guy. And he was talking about this whole concept. He's like, I could never go back to a job because I know too much. And it's not that he necessarily knows everything. It's just he knows what it's like to live on the other side and to be boss free. Or as he calls it, a solopreneur. And that just made so much sense to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I was thinking, too, why do you think people are bad bosses? Because I think... You know, the idea of a boss-free society appeals, even just in hearing it, to so many of us because we're used to having bad bosses and we always have that experience of, like, a horrible boss. Why do you think people are bad bosses? Because, right, nobody goes like, hey, I want to crush somebody's soul today.
I mean, maybe some people do, right?
There are those people that do. I am so convinced because I've been around those kind of people.
Sure. But I even think that most of those people, it's just, you know, they didn't get enough hugs or, you know, a lot of times maybe they're just not living their, you know, passion or purpose, right?
Yeah.
And so they're kind of pushing it out to others. So I'm just to flip the script a little bit, what do you think would make a good boss? Because not all of us are going to be able to work in this, you know, boss-free world. And maybe that's just an opinion, but what would it take to be a good boss?
All right. Well, I definitely am passionate about this topic because I've seen the good and the bad. I mean, I was in corporate for, 18 years, and I've seen all kinds of bosses.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
For a long time, you know, in different companies, at different levels. I've managed teams. I've been managed many times, right? And I think that when a boss is like a complete jerk, male, female, it doesn't matter, obviously, but they're coming from a low their emotional intelligence is very low.
Sure.
They're operating from a place of ego or status. And usually it means that they have really low self-worth. I know this may seem like more like, what? Come on. But it is true because people who are very threatened by perhaps smarter people or they don't want or they want to take the credit, it's coming from a really low way of their own thinking.
Right.
How they feel about themselves. Versus I've had really great bosses that are memorable because they're so few and far between that they're all about the team. So the collective team of what are we doing together? What are we creating? And I've also seen the bosses that have been great where they're like, listen, there's no showboating here, right? We either all succeed together or we're only as good as the weakest link type of thing. And I think that has gone such a long way because I can think about the days in corporate and say, wow, those two bosses really stood out. It wasn't about them. And see, the way that they looked at it, and they didn't know each other, this was two different companies, was when I make my people look good, right, when I empower my people, just by the very nature of me doing that, I'm going to look good.
Right.
So smart, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, you touch on something that I think applies definitely to bosses. It applies really to all of us. It's just this idea of emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
And it's, and okay, let's be straightforward. I'm completely biased. I write books about networking and relationships and a lot of the soft skills.
Yeah.
But show me a person who's a grounded, self-aware, you know, self-actualized person who can interact with other people well. You can put whatever skills you want that are necessary onto that person.
Exactly.
But, yeah, like I think of some of the, you know, bosses or mentors that I've had, and they're exactly what you said. They're the people that really understand the us versus I concept, right?
This is totally.
And it's not just something you can, you know, read in a book and go, oh, I will speak in terms of my team now, you know?
Well, yeah, and I always used to, and I remember one of those bosses saying, he's like, look, it's not whether you got the job done because you're paid for the results, but it's how you got it done. So if you finished a project and you managed to piss off everybody in the process, that's going to leave a damaging trail, yeah?
Right.
But if you got the job done and in the process created stronger rapport with people, the relationship was strengthened, the results were great, it's like everybody wins. It's so simple, and yet so many people don't understand that because they're so myopic in thinking that I'm going to take credit for that. And it's like it's so full of ego.
Right.
It's just really ridiculous. I'm like, are you kidding me? What happened to you? Like, you exactly like you said, you weren't held enough? Like, somebody dropped you in your head. What happened? This is not normal. You know what I mean? So
right. So if we take that idea then and kind of extrapolate it, when you're working with entrepreneurs, because I know you work a lot with entrepreneurs as I do, and solopreneurs, people who are kind of starting their boss-free path, so to speak, and we'll talk a little bit about creative buzz in a little bit. But do you think that those same skills of being a good boss are important to being your own boss?
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
Okay.
So I think it's where, I mean, I've heard this, and I'm definitely it's such a good philosophy in thinking, I want to be around people that are smarter than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm the smartest person in the room, I got to find another room, is what it's all about. Because I am very candid in the style that I have, in that if I hire a coach to help coach me, take me to the next level, don't waste time in fluffing the conversation. Like, no, give me the download of where my gaps are and how do I close that. And so with that, you have to be really honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're in your own way, how can you move forward? It's just not possible. And it's very possible that you're the bottleneck to your own success. You know, I've had coaches tell me, like, you're really effed up in this area. I'm like, really? Wow, really? And then, but it's coming from a place of wanting to help me to move forward. So similar to that, when we coach, you know, when we're in a small business engagement, there's so many business owners that are saying, hey, I'm flat in my growth year over year. I can't seem to break through. There's a bottleneck in the system. And the truth is, they don't want to hear the truth because they're in their own way.
Right.
And you can show it to them, but I would say you can't change anybody unless they really understand that they are ready to be changed and incorporate that change. Because how many times do people are sitting there nodding their heads like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm totally going to do it. Yeah. And then they can't get out of their comfort zones because it's so different.
Sure.
So there they are again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're back to their old ways of doing things.
Right.
And it's such a disservice.
It makes me think of, there's an old television show called Sports Center, and it was only on for like two seasons. This is like early 2000s, and I loved it. It was a great show. And of course, because it had really witty writing, great characters, they took off the air right away. But at one point, the boss says, you know, I've learned one rule in business, always surround yourself with smarter people. And if not, surround yourself with really smart people that disagree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting because I've seen that as a trend with just people that I've met in my entrepreneurial career, that I just see them. I'm like, wow, that's so amazing. Here you are. Like an inventor or a multiple millionaire, or you've done this or you acquired that business, you know, tell me the secret. And they're always like, just surround yourself with wicked smart people and have no ego about it.
Right.
And it's just, it's pretty simple.
It is, right? It's so simple. Well, and okay, so, I mean, because this is the stuff that I love to talk about and think about all day. That is super simple, but it's not easy.
But right. It's not easy.
Well, why do you think it isn't easy for people? Like, what are you saying? Like, as a, yeah, we can say, oh, people just aren't ready for it. But why? Like, why do you think people aren't ready for it?
So I have a really, I have a friend that I've met through this whole entrepreneurial journey. His name's Christian Cotta. And if you haven't heard of him, you should definitely have him on your show. He's awesome. And he's an entrepreneur. He's amazing. I'll have to do an intro to you. He's the kind of guy where you can say, hey, Christian, here's a really great concept. He will take it and run with it. I mean, there is no hesitation on what it, like, you give him a roadmap, he's all over it. He is like a hobo on a ham sandwich. It's ridiculous.
Okay.
And I'm not kidding. And so he was talking about the fact that he like alluded it to, why do we get in our own way? So he has a Periscope show. He's all over the place,
okay.
You know? And he was talking to people like, why do people get hung up in their own thinking and self-sabotage or not move ahead? And he said, do you understand how ridiculous that is? He goes, we're the only species that it's like we get in our own heads, we're in our own way, or we try to be something that we're not, or we're not authentic. And he's like, it's not like you see a squirrel going up to a nut and saying, I don't know if I deserve this nut. No, the squirrel just gets the freaking nut. And I was like, oh my God, that's the best line ever. He's like, why do we self-sabotage? I'm like, that's exactly it. It's like we self-sabotage, we question our own worth, we're trying to be something we're not. If we just live in our authenticity, in our own gifts, and I know this may seem like airy fair, but it's the truth. It is so true. If that's the way to get ahead and move forward, right, into your own truth, and understanding that if you're feeling uneasy, it's because you're tapping into that comfort zone that's being expanded.
Right.
So feel the feeling and just be like, all right, I'm feeling scared. This is awesome. So all that means is that I'm expanding my comfort zone. So just recognize the feeling and do it anyway, because if you give in, it just keeps you just the same. And if it's just a shift in thinking, It's just a shift in thinking. It's like, stretch yourself. You're going to feel that feeling, but once you walk through that fear, it's so freaking cool on the other side. It just makes you, you know, live
sure.
more.
Sure.
You know?
So here's a question, because I'm totally right with you. I live a lot of that philosophy myself, work with my clients on that. How do you see the difference between getting out of your comfort zone and not, let me put it this way, discomfort, right, is often because we're out of our comfort zone, and that's where we learn and grow.
Right.
Sometimes, though, that's actually a message, right, that something's off, right? Because feedback, like, allows us to change course sometimes, too, right? You know, we're trying to, let's say, a new endeavor, right? Mm-hmm. Just try a new podcast. It might be uncomfortable. You're growing. You try it. That's great. And sometimes, though, the feedback that people don't listen to is, hey, something's not right. Maybe you shouldn't be doing that podcast, or you don't have the skills. Would you say that it doesn't matter and you just keep going through and just keep pushing forward? Or does that make sense? I'm always curious as to what I just think sometimes we get really fired up about this idea of, as you said, like, being authentic, living in our power, because most people aren't tapping into nearly what they could. But then I think sometimes people take it too extreme, and right, it's like athletics is always an example of this for me. You know, you see the person at the gym who's like, hey, I'm uncomfortable and I'm sore because, you know, I wasn't in good shape and I'm kind of getting in good shape, and that's great. And then you see the person who's like the ultra marathoner, and I'm like, you've got problems. Like, your knees don't work. Your hips don't
work.
Oh,
I'm serious.
Right. You've pushed yourself beyond that point of growth into, you know, like, you didn't listen to your body. There's something, you know, because I teach fitness where they're like, you know, no pain, no gain. And that's, like, absolutely wrong. Like, that pain is feedback going, something's not right there. Sore is okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, a pain feedback mechanism. Do you see where I'm going with that? I don't know if there's a right answer, but it's just one that I'm always curious about. Because when you live on the edge, we get excited talking about the positive, but we don't, I think, talking about, here's how to recognize what might be the differentiator between a feedback loop. Is that?
Yeah. Yes. So how I'm interpreting is that, to me, there's a difference between getting out of your comfort zone, which is just exposure to something new that is going to stretch you a little bit,
okay.
Right? And so that is all in the name of growth.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm seeing, or from what I'm interpreting, or my take on what you just said, then the other side of it is...
Very good coaching, by the way. I like coaching. What I'm hearing you say...
No, because I'm seeking to understand you right
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
So the other side of it, or the way that I'm interpreting it, is that there's a question where, if you're not sure about something, I always go with my gut. It
okay.
doesn't feel me. And so if you feel uneasy about something, it's just your gut, your intuition, it's God, it's your conscious, subconscious, like, not in the limit, well, whatever you want to call it. Right.
So
I call it my gut. If my gut is telling me something, then I know that it's just giving me a warning signal. So say that I'm an ultra marathoner, I start the ultra marathons, I'm doing this, and I'm like, this is freaking awesome. Then say I want to do a 200 mile run,
mm-hmm.
right? So if my body's shutting down in my gut, I know that I'm not making good moves, you know?
Right.
So that's your intuition, your soul, whatever you want to call it, giving you feedback saying, hey, stop the bus, this isn't for you. So that, to me, is different than you getting yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, I like that. And I think something you're really keying into is this idea of awareness.
Exactly. It's awareness.
And I think one of the things, like, even talking about the idea of surrounding yourself with smart people, and people who, you know, who want the best for you but are willing to push you, a lot of times, you know, when you're around somebody who's really good and cares about you, when they're willing to push you and also sometimes willing to go, hey, you know, I'm getting some feedback about what you're saying, and it seems like you might want to really pay attention to this, right?
Right.
Like, I know I've worked with people, for example, where, you know, they're on the entrepreneurial path and they're starting to get some really, really strong negative feedback from a spouse, right?
Right.
And there's one thing for a spouse to be like, you know, hey, I want to support you and I'm excited for you. and, you know, hey, a little discomfort, we'll work through this. But then when the spouse starts going, hey, this is actually a problem,
right,
like you kind of go, no, pay attention to that, because people do get divorced over this.
Yeah.
And so I love that idea of awareness that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you think that everybody, I think that everybody can be on this path of self-awareness and emotional intelligence. And I mean, I think we're all at different places in our journey and kind of working towards that. But do you think everybody's cut out to not have a boss or, you know, to be out on their own?
No, I mean, I definitely don't think it's for everybody, because then everyone would, there'd be a universal brigade of solopreneurs, you know what I mean, or entrepreneurs. I think there's different people for different journeys, and I know for me, I was like, why am I so miserable? I got this promotion, I'm still miserable. You know, I get this bonus, my God, I'm still miserable, what's happening? And so it's just this calling that you have, again, it's just this self-awareness, which is sounds like the theme of what we're covering, is where you're uneasy, and it was just taking having the mental fortitude, because it took me a while to really wrap my head around the fact that this is what I wanted, and taking that leap of faith, because I was so scared. It's just this conditioning that I had for 18 years to be an employee, even though in my mind I was like, no, I want more. And so there's a huge fear factor there.
What was it for you, and it kind of maybe even beyond that, what do you see in others that kind of allows them to make that leap?
For me, it was fear of not knowing if I could make it.
Okay.
It was fear about like, oh my God, I'm not going to have a paycheck. So here's really the difference, is that some people think that being an entrepreneur is really awesome. You can, you know, go to yoga class and then hang out with your friends for a 3-hour lunch.
Right.
But as an entrepreneur, you're directly compensated for the value that you bring and the results that you get. Conversely, if you're an employee, this is no diss on any employees. I'm giving you one perspective, is that you have a paycheck. It's every 2 weeks. You get your taxes taken out automatically. You have insurance. It's all set up for you. And even if you're not productive for a whole week, it doesn't matter, because at the end of the 2 weeks, there you go. You got a paycheck. Super easy, right?
Right.
So that's really the difference, is just not knowing the different types of mentality, is that I'm directly accountable for the results that I produce. And so if I'm, as an entrepreneur, if I'm falling short, I just have to understand that I have to create new money.
Right.
It's all up to me. There is no $10,000 a month. Fine. It's just as easy to make $100,000 a month if you wanted to as an entrepreneur. But there's a lot of different skills that are required to get you to that level, as well as the thinking, the connections. It's a lot of work. I would say I work way more than I did as an employee, but to me, it's not work anymore.
Sure.
Because I love so much about what I'm doing. So for me, this was a good decision. For other people who can't understand or wrap their heads around the fact that you're going to be working way more than you do as an employee, and oh, by the way, there's uncertainty. There's going to be feast or famine, lots of different seasons. You're going to lose a lot of money in certain transactions that you make or certain types of deals that you get to. So you have to have the stomach for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a low risk propensity, don't do it. And for you, an employee makes sense. You know what I mean? And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just certain people are wired a certain way. Like, I love the creativity of what I'm doing, the people that I'm meeting, everybody, like all these people that I'm surrounded with, we all have like monkeys in our heads, and it's like, okay, well, let's take that concept and roll it out, see what we can do there. It's just this incredible ability to pivot and to be nimble and taking on new ideas that I find exciting every single day. So that's what works for me.
Right. I think something too that we're going to see more is as there's more mobility in our work lives. I think what'll be interesting to see, and we're seeing the inklings of it, is people kind of slipping in and out of the entrepreneurial and employee world. And, you know, like I have friends who are very entrepreneurial, but are in more of like an employee role right now, or what you'd call kind of a corporate role right now. Because, for example, they have, you know, small children. And they're like, you know, right now to work the 80 hours a week to build something isn't really feasible, right? And whether it's children or other, you know, taking care of an older parent, or just the idea of that you can fit your work into your life in whatever way you want is, I think, one of the more exciting things that we're seeing. Whether, because you can be an entrepreneur, you can be a solopreneur, you can work in a startup, you can work with a huge established company, you can work with someone that's maybe local and more nimble. And I'm excited to see what happens as we see more of this, again, mobility between positions. I mean, my dad worked for the post office for 30 years, right? If I met somebody right now who's like, oh, I'm going to work for the same company for 30 years, I'd be like, wow, that's cool, because that just doesn't happen.
It's so unheard of these days, yeah.
Right. All right, so that's interesting. So I want to ask you, I'm going to totally switch gears. I want to ask you about the hero with 1,000 faces, all right? So I'm going to ask you about that, but first... Everybody, you are listening to the beginning of Season 2 of Beer, Beats, and Business. I am your host, D. Fish. If you want to reach out to me, please shoot me a tweet at DFishRockstar. If you have a question, an idea for a guest, a topic we should cover, or you just want to tell me how awesome you think I am, I'm totally okay with that. Shoot me a tweet. Of course, do not do it while you're driving, because that would be massively dangerous. And today, I am talking with Patty Dominguez. Patty is the chief strategist of createbuzznow.com. As she says, she is a recovering corporate executive, and she's really right now passionate about helping her clients, who tend to be small business owners, make the world a better place for the world and for themselves as small business owners. So, Patty, how can people find out more about you?
They can check me out at createbuzznow.com. Again, that's createbuzznow.com. You can go to our Facebook page, Create Buzz. I also have a podcast, like you mentioned, DFish, BusFreeSociety.com. So that's for people that are transitioning from a job into being just an entrepreneur or solopreneur. So there's a lot of the psychology around what it takes and the skills, the habits, and all that is required to live a bus-free lifestyle.
Love it. As most people in the entrepreneurial world find out, it's really not about the skills, it's about the psychology.
Totally.
More than anything else. So, yeah. Which is a great tie-in. So I always ask my guests about what they're reading right now, and you included The Hero with 1,000 Faces, Joseph Campbell, a fascinating book. I didn't ask how far you are into it, but what's been the biggest thing that's stood out to you in this?
Well, I... grabbed the book because a friend of mine who was actually my coach was this 18 months ago, he recommended it, because I was having some wall kicking moments, like, what is this happening to me, you know, why can't I push forward, I see all these other people with success. And he's like, so he said, just like any good mythology story or any good Hollywood movie, there's a sequence to what's happening. So certain people call it, maybe you hear Jim Rohn or Tony Robbins, they call it seasons.
Right.
So we all go through seasons in our life, in our career, etc. So he told me to read this book, and I read it, and then it's the kind of book where you have to read over and over depending on where you are in your life.
Yeah.
Right?
Joseph Campbell is not an easy read, just for the heck of it.
It's not. It was a lot to get through, but I like this whole process of the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of it, there's this whole new you. So it's like a rebirth of who you were intended to be all along. So I just think that's really powerful. And, you know, he suggested that I read it, but it was painful to get through. But at the end, I'm like, oh, this is a hero's journey. You should have just said that. You know, there's a lot of good stuff out there about the hero's journey, but it's really fascinating.
What I find interesting is, if you don't know who Joseph Campbell is and you're listening in, he was basically an anthropologist and probably one of the foremost experts on world mythology. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about this hero's journey is what he did is he looked across, like, all cultures, and he found in mythologies, you know, as diverse as New Guinea and Europe and Africa and, you know, the Americas, that they all kind of had these archetypal steps. So why I wanted to ask you about it and bring it up is because I actually think that being an entrepreneur is the way that modern people, at least in the West, go through the hero's journey. Because they don't – so one of the big things that I know Joseph Campbell talks about a lot is that there's this idea of adulthood, and you have to go through rituals, right? Mm-hmm. And if you think about a lot of kind of – indigenous tribes have very specific ways that a child becomes an adult and becomes accepted as a full member.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we always have that in modern society. And I think that being an entrepreneur is very much about kind of, like you said, you come out of the other side and you feel so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it's not even that, oh, now I make $1 million, but it's like what you learned about yourself.
Exactly. That is so true. That's deep. That's deep. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it's about. It's the person you become in the process.
Well, we can get deep, even though we'll talk about some beer or beets and business. But I was actually doing having a live beer beets and business episode just a few days ago. But of course, we weren't recording it. And it was just one of my friends, and we were just at a bar.
You're like, damn it, I need to record this.
I said that because we were having a great conversation about law. And, the way that the law is set up in the United States, it was fantastic. But, all the good, deep conversations happen over a beer I found or the like. And I know that you're not a beer fan, and I still let you come on the show.
I really appreciate that. I am a violator of your rule. I do not drink beer, but I do drink wine, and I love me a good martini as well.
And that's okay. Like, we're pretty open. Like, you could just have a nice herbal tea, and I'd be down.
No, I'd rather have the martini.
Nice. What style do you prefer? And by the way, I'm breaking my own rule too, because today we don't have a sponsor for the show, a beer sponsor. So today I'm just drinking tequila on the rocks, just sipping it. Nice tequila. But anyway.
Nice. Enjoy. I don't do tequila. A horror story. When I turned 21, I said to myself, I'm going to have 21 shots of tequila. I didn't have 21 shots of tequila. I stopped at like maybe 12 or so, and I'm not a fan ever since. So that wasn't a good move on my 21st birthday.
So first of all, that's not tequila's fault. Second of all, that's a true hero's journey. You came out
that
a different person on the other side.
Yeah, I'm a deep hatred for tequila.
So what kind of martinis are you a fan of?
I love, it's funny, and so every time, I get together with my friend, who's my son's godmother, we always start out our dinner with a good martini. Stoli, lemon drop, real lemon juice. I hate sweet and sour mix. I think it's so disgusting. And I'm like, it has to be fresh lemon juice. Like, if you can't do it, that's cool. Just tell us, because then we'll probably get something else. There's got to be real lemon juice.
What I love about sweet and sour mix is nobody could actually tell you what sweet and sour mix is.
Yeah,
right? Like,
it's high fructose corn syrup and weird powders. I don't know. It's disgusting.
when you're drinking wine, and I will admit, and this will probably become a running theme / joke on the show, I'm a Trogdolite. I always say that word wrong. Trogdolite. I'm a caveman as far as wine is concerned. I don't have any skills to appreciate it. But I know that you're a huge fan. What do you drink when you're drinking wine? You a red or a white?
I am a red primarily. I love Malbec and Cabernets, like so fuller-bodied wine. I just got a beautiful bottle of Jordan Cabernet from my coach. He sent it to me. He's like, you've been working really hard. You deserve a good bottle of wine.
That's
like,
a good coach.
Yeah. That's.
I don't want any of my clients to hear that. I'm not giving them liquor.
He had me at wine. I'm good. I'm good after that.
You're good. You're, he's like, I know you've been uncomfortable here. This will help. This will help with the comfort factor just a little bit. And right. And hey, I tell that to people that I my clients, I tell that to myself all the time. There's times to be uncomfortable and grow. And sometimes you just need to sit there and relax. Have a nice drink. Everything's going to be okay.
That's right.
Oh, I love it. Well, I'm gonna wrap up our conversation. I think we're at a really great place to kind of wrap things up. And I always ask all of my guests to finish up. If you could give someone a tip today to make today a little better, what would it be?
Hopefully this isn't a boring answer for you guys, but I just got to say, having a morning routine is so essential to me.
Okay.
I meditate every morning, as well as I have this really cool little app. It started out as a hardcover book called the 5-Minute Journal. And so they recently introduced, or they relaunched their app. It's the 5-Minute Journal app. And I basically start out my day. It's really quick. You start out your day with three things you're thankful for, three things you want to accomplish in the day, some quotes for you, so like an affirmation. And then at the end of the night, you go back and you talk about the three highlights of your day, and you end your day talking about what you should have worked on or some other areas that could have gone better.
Very cool.
And yeah, and so just those two things. I mean, I meditate religiously, and then having that app is just, it's really just like critical to me now. It's like combing my hair or brushing my teeth, mm-hmm. That's what I do.
Perfect. And I just, no matter, I would say almost what the morning routine is, just having some routine to get yourself in the day the right way.
Exactly.
So you don't have to think about it, right?
Right.
And, yeah, that's awesome. So hopefully one of the things that you will put in the journal for tonight is that you, one of the highlights was our conversation.
Indeed it will be. It'll take up all three slots.
Oh, I love it. Patty.
And then I like D-Fish because of this and he said that. I'm a groupie now.
I love it. Patty, thank you so much for being on
thank
today.
You.
And have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank you. It's an honor and a privilege. Thank you so much, D-Fish. I appreciate you.
As always, thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links to the topics in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcasting services. This episode, like all others, is brought to you by our regulars over at Patreon. If you'd like to be one of the people with your own spot at the bar, we'd love to have you. Visit patreon.com/B3 and become a regular today. Want to get in on the conversation? Easy. Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
I'm DFish. Thanks for joining us today.
All right. So a nice lemon drop. That's you're classing up the show. I like
classing up the joint.
That's great. I love it.